Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew. And tonight we have the 1999 film Being John Malkovich, directed by Spike Jonze and written by Charlie Kaufman.
Yeah.
Now, Brother Jay, is this on your list?
It is.
Okay, you want to introduce us to Being John Malkovich?
First of all, I will bias this to saying that I love this movie. This is a great movie in my opinion. So, I already suspect Brother Drew hates it, but I will digress. This movie is a fun little, almost horror-esque in some fashions movie. A little bit of supernatural fantasy where basically the John Cusack character discovers in this strange environment a portal which lends itself to being actually inside the spirit and body of John Malkovich for 15 minutes until you're expelled on the New Jersey Turnpike. And his pursuits to further himself in his life of being a puppet master.
Did you see this in the theater?
I may have. I probably did. When did it come out? I should have checked that first. You know, in 99, probably not. I would have been too busy at work. I probably saw this on video at home, probably on VHS. I probably watched it at home on one of my down nights because this 99 through 2001 would have been conversion at Fred's. So I would have been super busy. So I'm probably not going to movies as much, but I did rent movies on the weekends and drink myself to sleep.
Brother Drew, what's your history of this movie?
I saw it when it first came out on video. I did not see it in the theater. Didn't really know what I was getting into the first time I watched it. And I found it extremely odd, as you can imagine. But also pretty great. But unfortunately, a little forgettable. Like, I remember the basic presence. And I remembered for sure the Malkovich scene. But the rest of it just kind of fell away. So there was a lot that was surprising to me for this rewatch. It actually felt pretty fresh to me. And I actually really like this movie.
You say, well, you were pleasantly surprised?
No, I was... I had high expectations and admit it. I remembered it with affection. Just... didn't remember much of it. I mean, it's been almost 20 years. So, you know, it's a little quirky, I think, just for the sake of being quirky sometimes, to its detriment. But it is such an original movie, you know, with some very familiar tropes. But it's so out there and it's crafted so sincerely. Like, there's no, like, winking in this movie. Everybody plays it really earnestly. And this was the first time I really noticed Catherine Keener.
Yes.
I mean, I'd seen her before in Out of Sight, but she was so great in this movie. Everybody was great in this movie. I enjoyed it. It wasn't, like laugh-out-loud funny, but there were a lot of moments where I thought to myself, huh, that's really funny. Yeah, it was a fun rewatch.
I didn't recognize Cameron Diaz when I first watched it, and when I rewatched it this weekend, it took me 15 minutes to realize again it was Cameron Diaz. So,
yeah, she's my least favorite part of this movie.
I watched this in the theater, but I agree that it was, there are lots of it that were forgettable. I mean, if I were to describe this to someone who hadn't seen it, I would say this is a cross between Wild at Heart and Hudsucker Proxy.
That seems like a fair, that sounds like a fair synopsis.
Because it's almost a fairy tale, but it's like absurd to the point. I mean, yeah, it's absurd for absurd sake, but it's such a fanciful idea. And the fact that they pulled it off, I think, is incredible.
No, I think you're exactly right, though. It is a fairy tale, like complete with a moral.
Well, we'll get to the end and you'll tell us what the moral is. Or maybe, well, anyway. So, Charlie Kaufman.
I hate to interrupt you.
You don't. When I look up, wait, you like interrupting. It's fine.
It was sarcasm. Yeah. The billing of the movie on IMDb stars John Cusack, Cameron Diaz, Catherine Keener. John Malkovich is not listed.
Yeah.
It's kind of a big middle finger.
No, it's hilarious. And hearing the reported history of the movie, and it's hard to tell. Anytime I think Charlie Kaufman is involved, I get a little concerned about whether anything you hear about the movie is correct. Like, I know we talked about adaptation, and we definitely need to talk about adaptation sooner than later. Because okay. I remember loving that movie, but it also is got a certain amount of strangeness to it.
I've never seen it. Yeah. I've never seen Magnolia. I've never seen, I mean, I know he's in
Magnolia.
Yeah, he's not involved in Magnolia.
No, I'm just saying there's similar movies in the vein. Lost in Translation is another one.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. I love Magnolia. At least I remember loving it. And I have never seen Lost in Translation.
Lost in Translation is a great movie.
I have not seen other Charlie Kaufman works such as Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
I have not seen it. Oh,
that is a fantastic movie.
And Synecdoche, New York, I have not seen either.
Schenectady?
No, it's Synecdoche.
Okay.
On purpose.
On purpose?
Yeah, there's a word called Synecdoche. There's a thing called a Synecdoche.
Is that like where people listen to scissors cutting hair?
I can't explain it well enough to do it justice. But also he wrote, or he did the screenplay for, he adapted the screenplay for Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, which was another kind of bizarre movie, but I thought it was fun.
We should do a triple header of adaptation, Eternal Sunshine, and the latest one, Anomalisa.
Is that like puppets or something, or claymation, or?
Okay. Yes.
No, puppets. It is puppets, right? Like
yes.
Marionettes.
Yes.
Okay.
He's got a thing.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. It turns out it's a weird thing, but it's kind of fun.
He wrote 2 episodes of Ned and Stacy.
He got his start writing on Get a Life.
Oh God.
He only wrote for 2 episodes of it, but like that launched him into writing for other things. It was like, oh, you have talent. We just don't know where you're gonna go with that talent yet.
Dana Carvey show.
This isn't the place for talent.
Yeah. Oh, come on. Chris Elliott?
I liked it. I like that show.
I like Chris Elliott. And his dad is freaking famous, legend.
Sam?
No.
Sam Elliott?
Bob Elliott from Bob and Ray. They were 30 years of radio hosting and stuff.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
This is a surprise time for me because I haven't had an opportunity to meet and talk with our next guest. Incidentally, this chair here sat in Mary Magoon's dining room for years and years. I don't know if that has any special meaning to you, sir. No. But would you sit there now and tell us your name, please?
Harlow P. Whitcomb.
And where are you from?
From Glens Falls,
New York.
New York.
And And what do you do?
I am the president and recording...
Secretary.
Secretary of the STOA.
What does that stand for?
Slow Talkers of America. We believe
in speaking slowly,
in forming
your words, thoughts,
our ideas and opinions clearly before
speaking.
We speak. We are here
in New York City.
In the city of New York. Attending
a convention.
Our annual
convention.
Membership
convention.
Convention. All of our members, all 200
members
and 50
members,
seven
members,
are here
speaking slowly, so that you'll never be misunderstood,
as opposed to the members of the
F-T-O-A.
T-O-A.
O-A.
A. The Fast.
Talkers of America.
Talkers.
Of America.
Of America.
America.
Our credo.
Is to speak slowly.
Goes something like this.
Would you lower the curtain, please? We making me a nervous wreck.
So this movie was budgeted $13 million, made $22 million. So that's a decent return.
For such a weirdo movie, I think that's a success.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I would have never pegged John Malkovich as being somebody who could be this self-deprecating.
Well, he didn't really want to do it originally. In fact, he offered to produce it. But he wanted Tom Cruise to star in it. But Kaufman is like, no, there's no one else than John Malkovich. It has to be John Malkovich.
So he wanted it to be being Tom Cruise?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what he wanted it to be. And he was willing to pay for it. And I mean, I think it had the script itself went around and it was considered to be the best script that would never get made because it was just impossible.
That would have been a very different movie with Tom Cruise. I don't think it would have been anywhere near as good.
Before we get into the actual plot, do you know what the plot was going to be?
Oh, no.
Or maybe we should get into the regular plot first.
Yeah, maybe we should, yeah. Let's wrap up with the what it should have been.
I would say what it could have been, not what it should have been. Because I think, as it turns out, although maybe Drew got a different moral than I did, but I think it was kind of a sweet movie. At least in its treatment of John Malkovich.
I was going to say, not real sweet in the, I'm going to assault and abuse my wife and put her in bondage and threaten her.
Wasn't bondage as much as just straight up kidnapping and...
Yeah, assault.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's a template to live your life by.
Well, I would hope not.
Okay, so... This movie starts out, we meet Craig Schwartz, played by John Cusack.
Well, but first we get the open with the strange marionette puppet show.
Yes. Yes, because John Cusack is a marionette puppeteer.
And I observed at this point, I said, oh, look, it's serial killer John Cusack.
No, serial killer John Cusack is way more chilling.
And so I have a question, and we might not be able to answer it now, but you may be able to answer it a little later as we go on. To me, this movie seemed like it was shot in a lot of shaky cam.
It didn't
seem real steady.
That, but I noticed so. It was kind of dark and moody.
It was very dark.
Yeah, I didn't get shaky cam.
Could have been just me.
You could have been shaky.
Could have been.
Sorry, it's a, you know, we go through things. So John Cusack is a puppeteer. And he's one of those great unsuccessful artists that take their art very seriously.
Absurdly seriously.
Yes. And that's the best kind of artist.
That's the running adjective throughout this movie. Everything is taken to the absurd level in this movie.
What's the other puppeteer, Dimitri Martini or Derek Martini or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Who is the guy who he sees on TV directing a big gigantic marionette?
Mm-hmm.
And he has nothing but bad words for him because he's the true artist and this guy's just flashy, gimmicky guy. Again, the worst kind of artist, unsuccessful artist, the sour grapes kind.
With really bad hair.
Yes. Well, but he has better hair than his wife, Lottie,
it's
played
true.
By Cameron Diaz. I'd say she's nearly unrecognizable.
I did, like I said, I didn't recognize her. So he's suffering from the throw mama from the train syndrome.
In what way?
Well, he thinks that somebody else has stolen his thunder.
He's taking no personal responsibility for his inability to be famous and successful in his job. He actually, as it turns out, he does crazy, obscure marionette puppetry busking.
Abelard and Heloise, yes. The love story.
Yes, he's basically doing a puppet show about a Middle Ages love story between cloistered lovers.
And who played Derek Martini? Derek Mantini.
Mantini.
Ned Bellamy.
That's my favorite. That's what I wear to the beach.
Your Mantini?
My Mantini, yes.
Mm. I bet that's a lady killer.
Kills lots of stuff. So, Ned Bellamy. He's of the Bellamy brothers?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, thank you for yes anding, one of you. Although going no further than saying yes and.
Hey, it's what we do.
Yeah, okay.
You should put it on the calendar.
So already we don't like John Cusack, except that he's John Cusack and he's freaking charming, no matter even if
wait
he's
a minute.
A bad guy.
Wait. Already you don't like him?
No, he's kind of a jerk. But I mean, he's charming, so I want to see more. I always want to see more.
Why is he a jerk? He's intense. He's dedicated to his craft and art. He's passionate about it. He's kind of a nerd in that respect.
Yeah,
he's a mooch.
He's a pretentious asshole. Moody.
Whoa! Wait a minute. What makes him a pretentious asshole? Just because he really likes his art and craft.
The hair, for one.
Well, okay, but this was also the 90s, so you have to take that into account.
No. The hair as a indicator of being a pretentious asshole is actually a plot point.
Oh, okay.
Middle-aged John Lennon hair? Maybe more like...
Julian Lennon hair, perhaps?
No, it's like John Lennon just post-India.
I was going to say Eric Carwash jacket hair.
No, it was more John Lennon long hair.
That's a mix.
More like Tom Noonan in Last Action Hero hair.
A movie I have not seen, but I'm going to give it to you for...
Whoa, you haven't seen...
Last Action Hero? I have not.
How is that... Okay.
Well, it got... Siskel and Ebert didn't like it, so I was like, well, I can take a pass.
Because we're clearly ruled by the critics.
Well, you know, I mean... I'm sure it'll be on the calendar at some point.
So next week, actually.
So Cameron Diaz plays Lottie, who is, well, she's sort of,
She's a crazy cat lady, except she collects everything but cats.
Yes. Yeah. She works in some sort of veterinary office, right? And she has, among other rescues, a monkey.
I think we're not sure where she actually works.
I have no idea where she works.
Oh.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's never discussed her job because she seemingly doesn't really have to go to work because she's always home.
Well, but she does come back from work.
Yeah. And she goes to work to kind of give her an opportunity to shame Cusack into getting a job.
Yeah, she's the only breadwinner because he can't make any money doing these obscure marionette plays.
Mm-hmm. And they can't even have a baby because of that.
Yeah, well, he doesn't want to have a baby until she gets some conditioner for that hair. If they just shared the hair conditioner that he clearly uses. Anyway. So, he goes to get a job. And
yes, and.
God damn it. So he goes to get a job, and he finds an ad in the paper for a filing job at the Lester Corp, which is in the 7.5 floor of the Merlin Flemmer building.
The ad specifically asked for somebody of nimble hands.
Yeah, and short stature.
Yes. Oh, look, John Cusack is pretty tall.
He is pretty tall. So, he goes, and we got to see Octavia Spencer.
Yeah.
I loved very seeing briefly. Her. She was hilarious. That's another actor with presence.
And she recognizes him just by the way he looks. 7.5, huh?
So she gets out the gigantic crowbar, which is hilarious.
Well, yeah. And all the dents in the elevator door that are there.
It's great. And, okay, the whole idea of the 7.5 floor is just a piece of absurdity just for absurdity's sake. It just takes it to the fairy tale section.
It takes it to 11.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be there, but it does something.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, no, I mean, it does something.
I mean, because the whole office is this strange world of misfits.
Well, yeah. First of all, we meet the secretary, Floris, played by Mary Kay Place from Girl Interrupted, Captain Ron, The Big Chill, Private Benjamin, and Mary Hartman.
And the West Wing.
And her character, I was tired of her almost immediately, except that like half of her character is she just can't hear correctly. And I thought it was too old. And the joke got old real fast. But also, she thought she was trying to seduce John Cusack in a way that I found hilarious.
I thought it was one of those jokes that got old really quickly, but they hung in with this so long that it got funny again towards the end.
I would agree with that.
And so he meets her. And then he is introduced to the boss, who's Dr. Lester, played by Orson Bean from Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman, among other things. And he is a straight-out weirdo. Again, like a character from the Hudsucker Proxy, or perhaps Wild at Heart.
He is filthy.
he is both filthy and doddering, which is a great combination.
He's also a million years old, according to him. Purportedly.
Well, because he drinks carrot juice. I think he says he's like 105, actually.
Yeah. From Jerry's Juiceteria.
Yes. So, Craig, John Cusack, gets the job. And he has to go to the employee orientation. Which is, I thought it was hilarious because all of us have been to employee orientations. And they are just about exactly like this every single time.
Yep. Low overhead. Wah,
wah. Yeah, it's the worst. And also the whole fairy tale about the little person wife back in the 1800s.
So ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
And yet I laughed.
Oh, it's hard not to smile. Just, again, to justify the 7.5 floor, which doesn't have to be there, but is just there the entire movie.
It took me a while when after we read Maxine to figure out where I had really seen Catherine Keener.
Can I guess?
And
You saw her in Death to Smoochie.
Yes, but that's not specifically what I remember her from.
Well, we saw her in Capote.
That's right.
She was Harper Lee.
She was.
And she's also in The 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Which I've also seen.
Although she herself in an interview says that she didn't particularly like Maxine as a person. She thought Maxine was too bold and sexy.
You're not supposed to like Maxine. She's terrible.
Maxine was a monster.
I love Maxine. She is a monster. She's a perfect monster. And she enjoys being a monster.
Yeah.
That's the best part of Maxine is she doesn't care. She knows because she's not fooling anybody. She's absolutely 100% monster and with a smile on her face.
She's unashamed in her monsterdom.
Yeah, she knows who she is. Again, she knows who she is. And that's when this movie takes a stranger turn. When you think you couldn't get stranger than the 7.5 floor, and the fact that Craig tries to be smooth to try to pick up Maxine, and Maxine shuts him down at many opportunities.
Well, and then he goes home and has the really creepy Craig and Maxine puppet show, basically cheating in his heart on his wife with Maxine, the puppet.
Oh, well, you see the Lottie puppet all kind of cast aside.
Yeah.
I mean, again.
Puppets seeing what they see, feeling what they feel.
This is not a subtle movie. Yeah, so this is where the movie takes a turn when Craig is doing his filing with his magic fingers, which also is ridiculous but hilarious, that they actually show him several times with his nimble fingers going through filing, which is just crazy. This is where he finds a small door and discovers this door is a portal into the brain of, or the head, actually, of John Malkovich.
The actor from that Jewel Thief movie.
Exactly. And that one role where he played the retard.
Yeah.
So he has found that this portal sucks him into the head of John Malkovich for 15 minutes and then spits him out of thin air onto the side of the Jersey Turnpike.
Covered in some kind of weird goo, ectoplasm, Malkovich juice.
If I recall correctly, he tells Maxine about this, but Maxine actually never does it, right? She never gets into John Malkovich.
Nope.
Yeah. She's happy to sell tickets to the John Malkovich ride, which they do. And Craig tells Lottie, and Lottie wants to do it. And Craig's like, well, I don't want you to come to the office when we're selling tickets after hours, because then you'll meet my partner, who is Maxine, who I really want to bone. So instead, let's just go now.
Did you happen to notice when he was forcefully ejected the first time that you get a big wide shot of the Twin Towers?
Yes.
I did notice that.
It's a very September 10th movie. But yeah, so she takes the John Malkovich tour. And she has a very visceral response to it.
It changes her to her core.
Yes, she loves being John Malkovich.
Being inside did something to me.
She at first announces that she is quite possibly a transsexual. And when Craig says, no, you're not a transsexual, she's very defensive about it, which is hilarious. And so, yeah, so she wants to do the John Malkovich ride all the time, every time.
Yep. She ends up meeting Maxine.
Yeah, in the meantime, Maxine wants to go and meet John Malkovich. She's just going to call him and arrange a date. So she picks up John Malkovich through the force of being Maxine, which, again, is why we love Maxine. And she discovers that she likes seducing John Malkovich, knowing that Lottie is looking through John Malkovich's eyes adoringly at her. So Lottie is something, a brain transsexual. And Maxine is not a lesbian, except with John Malkovich in the middle.
She got really she gets really turned on by having two sets of eyes looking at her adoringly at once.
Yes, yes. And which is, and as a running joke and thing, nobody is sexually attracted to Craig. Not Lottie, his wife, not Maxine, no one.
Definitely not Malkovich.
No, he doesn't think this is fair. And that's when we have the mayhem. Well, less mayhem than hijinks. How about that? And there are hijinks. And of course, we end up with, and we're going to yada yada, I think, because there's not much more plot than this. Although when we get to the end and we get to the moral of the story, I think. Because basically this, they're selling tickets to the Malkovich ride. And being a puppeteer, Craig finds out that he can actually, because he is, when he finds out that Maxine is sleeping with Malkovich so that she can get this being looked at with two eyes thing. And so she's really attracted to sleeping to Malkovich when Lottie is inside Malkovich. Craig decides to disable Lottie by locking her in
the chimp cage.
Yes.
Yeah.
And taking the Malkovich ride in her place. So everybody's having virtual sex with Maxine. But he, because he's a puppeteer, has found ways to control John Malkovich, which is very distressing to the person of John Malkovich. And eventually this turns into Malkovich taking the Malkovich ride, which is really skillfully done, I think. I mean, it's hard to describe how weird and fun that scene is.
The all Malkovich scene?
Yeah, and the thing is, John Malkovich is such a strange, like, very, like, what you'd expect as an actor, and yet also very charming. So you identify with John Malkovich at the same time as you're like, wow, that's pretty Malkovich.
And you get a surprise appearance by Charlie Sheen.
Yes, which, by the way, I think they were going to, I can't remember who the friend was supposed to be. But Malkovich himself said, no, let's get Charlie Sheen.
Okay.
Charlie Sheen was really good, but my favorite celebrity cameo was Sean Penn.
Dick. Andy Dick.
Yes, Andy Dick was funny. Sean Penn was funny. Yeah, because this is, you know, so Craig is going to get back at his wife and have the only kind of sex he can have with Maxine by being in John Malkovich. So he stays in John Malkovich for like 6 months, right?
8 months.
Yeah, for long enough for the baby to gestate.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And he's basically kidnapped John Malkovich and turned John Malkovich into a marionette puppeteer.
The best marionette puppeteer in the world.
So the Charlie Sheen character was originally supposed to be Kevin Bacon.
Oh, yes. Okay. But you couldn't have said Machine. Malcatraz. Yeah. By the way, I thought Charlie Sheen was really great in this role.
He was. He was perfect.
It is. It's the perfect Charlie Sheen role.
Totally believable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just out of rehab, so he needed work.
In a radio interview, writer Charlie Kaufman explained that while pitching John Malkovich's representatives to the story, Kaufman was informed by them that, much to his surprise, Malkovich lived at the time in a Manhattan apartment numbered 7.5.
Nope, don't believe it.
Yeah, that's the thing. You don't know what to believe.
Believe it or not.
Or not.
I don't.
Is there anybody better than Jack Palance?
Well,
hold on.
What does Siri have to say about it?
Siri says, is there anybody better than Kaplan's?
I would say lots of people are better because he's dead, but just that whole one-handed push-up thing.
No, just the whole hosting Ripley's Believe It or Not, where he was just so over the top.
I loved him.
Oh, me too. Hey, Siri, is there anyone better than Jack Palance?
This is riveting podcasting right here.
Okay, I found this on the web for, is there anything better, anyone better than Jack Palance?
Jack Palance. Roundup and weeds. Anybody got anything better? Okay. Sorry.
That's because your series Australian.
She is. What is your series? Yeah,
so mine's Default. Ah. So while Craig is kidnapping Malkovich, Lottie is figured out that his old boss is actually a time traveler, immortal being who passes his life essence into other people through this portal.
Yeah, I didn't get him as immortal being as much as he found out a secret and he's very, very old because of it. He wants to be an immortal being.
Yeah, now he has a cult.
Yes, because he wants to take all his friends who are super old too.
Well, you skip past the climax of the Charlie Sheen scene where he talks about hot lesbian witches.
Yes.
But yeah. Also, you get that whole Elijah the Chimp's rope trauma.
Oh my God. What was that? That was incredibly weird.
It was genius.
It was uncomfortably weird.
That is such a long way to go to set up to rescue a character in a movie. That was planted so early in the movie.
Just weird, though.
He's got an ulcer from some kind of childhood trauma. I'm not sure what it's from.
You're right. It was well set up.
It was nearly the Hitler car joke.
Yes.
From Rat Race.
Way better than that.
I'll take our kid to the Barbie museum. Remember when going on a road trip and running into Nazis was just a funny little element you could get in a John Lovitz movie? Now it's just every day in America. Yeah, I mean, again, so many little things. I don't want to yada yada too much, except that this is a movie best experienced than heard tell of, I think.
Yeah, it loses some in translation with us discussing it, for sure. The movie is a little dated in parts, but for the most part, it stands up for the time. Again, it was shocking to see Cameron Diaz, but...
Okay, so at the end of the movie, we'll spoil the end. At the end of the movie, basically, they have to engineer this whole thing where Fleming, who's Craig's boss, has to get into Malkovich right at the exact time, like when he turns 44, right?
Yes.
And
by midnight before he turns 44.
Yeah. Or else... The portal will open in some sort of baby. I mean, I guess you're right. I mean, I guess he's going to jump into another body at some point. He just wants to go into a 44-year-old.
It's all very clearly explained with his pamphlets.
he does have pamphlets, yes. Again,
yes.
Kind of a hudsucker proxy thing.
Yes, and if you don't. If you don't get in at the right time, you'll end up entering the next host permanently, and you'll be absorbed, as indicated by the pictogram of being in jail in a baby's brain.
So, shenanigans?
Shenanigans, kidnappings, what career-defining moves into puppetry, Swan Lake,
yes.
Malkovich mullet.
Yes. And then we have this kidnapping thing where, Lottie kidnaps Maxine, the pregnant Maxine.
Yes.
Pregnant with Malkovich's baby.
Well, they have a strange, I'm not even sure what you would call it, some kind of chase scene with the gunfire.
Through Malkovich's subconscious.
Yes. Yes. And finally... Craig decides he's going to leave Malkovich's body voluntarily.
To save Maxine.
And the kid that he thinks is his.
Yes.
But it's really Lottie's.
Yes, the baby's Lottie's.
Kind of.
Yeah.
It's
Lottie is the father.
It's John Malkovich's, but...
So, Dr. Lester and his gang get into Malkovich right at the right time, but... John Cusack tries to go into the portal again, too, And he ends up
He never saw the pamphlet.
Exactly. So he ends up going into that next host, which is a baby who happens to be Maxine and Lottie's baby. So he is trapped inside the baby. Dr. Lester is in Malkovich, but he's now convinced, they go forward in time, of course, and Maxine and Lottie are co-parenting the lovely baby Emily. And aging Don Malkovich and aging Charlie Sheen, who are still buddies, Malkovich is now going to take Charlie Sheen into the next jump they do, based on plan from the pamphlet.
Which is going to be Emily.
Which is going to be Emily?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're going to jump into Emily when she's 40-something and Schwartz has been absorbed.
Yeah. It's a dark future for Emily.
Yeah, it's true.
Especially with John Cusack, with him already there.
Yeah, so at a certain point, there's like a Brazilian people inside of the portal person.
Yeah.
If they keep bringing their friends along.
Yeah, they're going to run out of room.
Yeah, because theoretically, there's more than one person inside Lester, right? Or there could have been.
No, because he said he just figured out how to take his friends along.
Oh, okay. So this is where we have Hudsucker Proxy meets Wild at Heart meets Multiplicity.
Nice reference. Thank you.
So this is a twisted, dark, yet fun, absurd tale right from 1999, directed by the former husband of Sofia Coppola, who is mostly known for directing music videos.
Well, and you saw that Michael Stipe had a producer credit.
Oh, yeah.
And Bjork was the closing theme song. Yeah,
because he did all of the REM videos and the Bjork's videos and all those iconic videos was pretty much Spike Jonze gigs. He was one of the preeminent video directors.
Gary Sinise was in this, apparently.
Well, he was definitely in pictures. I don't know if
Winona Ryder, Gary Sinise, Dustin Hoffman as Willie Loman footage. Huh. A crazy melange.
Must have been when they were talking about Malkovich's past.
David Fincher.
Did you know that John Malkovich in the movie has a different middle name than the real John Malkovich?
Well, of course, because he's playing a character.
Mm-hmm.
He's just not a he's not a complete idiot. He's not. This is a documentary. He was quoted as saying he prepared for the role like he does any fictional thing. The only thing he had in common with this John Malkovich was the wardrobe. But John Malkovich has that great, like, feminine's the wrong word, but like
metrosexual.
Yeah, like, well, I'm like, it's no wonder that he actually played Ripley in another Ripley movie. Think Ripley's Game.
He was good.
Yeah, he was. What's Ripley's first name?
Tom.
Mr.
Tom Ripley. Okay, yeah.
No.
Yes, he was the talented Mr. Ripley. But yeah, yeah. Actually, he and Matt Damon both played good Ripleys. But of course, Malkovich was the older Ripley. And yeah, and we're seeing. I ran across that like on some sort of movie channel a couple of years ago, and was A, shocked that it even exists, and B, was very pleased about the casting, because who would be a better Ripley than John Malkovich? Nobody asked, but I'm gonna tell you anyway. I think I was introduced to the world of John Malkovich in The Line of Fire.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
And I think I was introduced to his buddy Gary Sinise in the television movie The Stand, opposite Molly Ringwald.
Forrest Gump was before that, though, right?
Maybe. I will never think of Forrest Gump without thinking of the President of the United States song, Gump.
He's all right. Wow.
really.
So, Brother Jay, your verdict on
being
John Malkovich.
I think this is a great movie. I still laughed. I laughed insanely at the when Malkovich enters his own mind, because I think that was just genius. And had some great comedic moments, not the least of which is him dressed up as a woman singing on a piano. But I would give this a strong B+, A-, somewhere in there.
Excellent.
It's definitely worth seeing if you haven't seen it. If you're a Malkovich fan, definitely. If you're a John Cusack fan, definitely. Definitely Catherine Keener. I mean, all three of those together should be enough for you to see this movie.
I thought Cameron Diaz was good in this movie, too.
She was, but she was annoying. And...
Yeah.
So, Drew, was it worth it?
Definitely. Definitely worth it. I think the best experience for this movie is watching it in a group. I'm assuming this is something that I will never do, but it is so absurd. I think you would get a lot of mileage out of enjoying it around other people, because it is such a weird, bizarre movie that if you're watching it by yourself, if you're like me, you'll have a lot of internal monologue about how weird and how funny it is, but not really. It's not the type of movie that really makes you laugh out loud. But it's a type of movie that is impossible to describe, but extremely fun to discuss.
And great to experience. I would definitely recommend this movie. I reminded me of another piece of trivia that, again, I don't know whether this trivia is true or not, but it's a fun thing to throw out there. Apparently, Malkovich, when he comes out of his own Malkovich trip, after you've been through that whole business of him on the piano and whatnot, and he gets thrust out on the Jersey Turnpike, there is a scene in the script where some guys drive past him and throw like a half a can of beer and hit him with it.
And it's in the movie.
You know, it is. He wanted it cut out because he thought it was unrealistic that anybody driving along could hit him with the can of beer. Apparently, when he said this, about 70 extras and crew members raised their hands saying they would like to give it a shot. And it was like John Cusack's assistant or something, that, or some sort of a writer or something, like an assistant PA or something, that got the nod, and he hit him in the first try. So, again, I don't know how true that is, but it makes me laugh to hear that story. So, yeah, so being John Malkovich, I say do it.
We've been told that a lot of young people may be tuned in and watching, and because of the hour, that to keep them tuned in, we should do something along the lines of disco.
Of course, I can't stand disco. I still prefer the acid rock of the late 60s. The Dead, The Airplane, Hot Tuna, Hendrix. This disco stuff sounds like a lot of noise to me.
Well, our producer prevailed, however, so Ray and I, with Jane, Lorraine, and Gilda, would like to do a little tune for you.
I'm saying.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.